we'll officially get underway. Can everybody hear okay out there? Is it too loud? Just right. That's what I like to hear. Welcome to North Plains. For those of you that are not from North Plains, this is the thriving metropolis and soon to be larger North Plains, hopefully. So thank you and welcome. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to allow, we have a couple committee members that are stuck in traffic. Representatives Greenlick, who just walked in the door, and Representative Dalto is at 217 and Highway 26. So I'm sure all of you here feel his pain. So what we will do at this point is I'd just like to give the committee members to simply introduce themselves, maybe tell where their district is located, and say a few words. So we'll start down here with Representative Steve March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve March. I represent House District 46, which is in the center of Portland, and it feels good to be back here in Washington County. I used to be a resident of Western Washington County before I moved into the big metropolis.
Thank you. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick. I'm from House District 33, and my district is just east of here. My district starts at Jackson School Road and goes all the way to the river.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
I'm Kim Thatcher. I'm from Kaiser, and I represent Newburgh and Kaiser and St. Paul.
Thank you. And I'm Derek Kitts. I represent the city of North Plains and most of Hillsborough and parts of Rock Creek, Beaverton, and Alloa. So thanks for agreeing to be here today. It's great to be back home. It's better than being in the state capital, as you might imagine. It's always better to be home. So, again, thank you for this wonderful turnout and this warm reception. So, I'd like to acknowledge we have Senator Bruce Starr with us, who also represents the great city of Hillsborough and North Plains. And I think Bruce is going to be one of the first to testify on some of the bills that we're going to be hearing today, as well as the Secretary of State himself has agreed to come out and be here with us today. So I would publicly like to thank him, and we'll do so further when he arrives. So with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2583.
Thank you.
Senator Starr, would you like to come forward and testify? The my committee assistant here, Cletus Moore, will read the summary of what 2583 does.
Mr. Chair and guests, members, House Bill 2583 requires evidence of citizenship for individuals registering to vote for the first time in Oregon, declares an emergency to be effective on passage.
Thank you, Cletus. Senator Starr, welcome, and thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to testify for the record. I'm Bruce Starr, State Senator, District 15, representing the communities of North Plains, Hillsborough, Cornelius, and Forest Grove. Mr. Chair, I appreciate really you taking the time to take the legislative process out of the Capitol. I know that we're doing that on both sides of the building, the House and Senate, and I think it's really important. And I think, quite frankly, the size of the audience here is one of the reasons why it's important that we get out of the building so that folks don't have to make that trip to Salem, that we're bringing the process to them. I think that's important. So I appreciate that, and doubly appreciate the opportunity that you bring the committee to the area that we represent. Mr. Chair, if it would be okay, I would like to make comments perhaps on both House Bill 2583 and 2551, if that would be okay with you. And
Senator Starr, I appreciate that. And for the record, I'm more than happy to indulge you in that. So, therefore, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2551 as well, so that your comments will be for the record on both bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These two bills are bills that are similar, if not identical, to bills that I introduced at the request of the same requesters around these bills, Ruth Bendel and Mike Balanese, in 2001. I believe that as important as the issues were in 2001, they're even more important today. And I'd like to thank Mike and Ruth for the continued work that they have pursued and have done in the areas that we're going to discuss today and the testimony that you're going to receive today. In 2001, we had public hearings on these bills. I believe the bill that's similar to House Bill 2551 was a bill that we had a work session on but failed to get the necessary votes in the committee to move out of committee. The as a lot of us that have been involved in the process for a long time know, it sometimes takes multiple sessions to move good ideas through the legislative process. And because of the good work that has been occurred since these issues were first brought to the legislature, I think that we're in a position that we have better data, better information, and but the arguments, quite frankly, are much the same. And my guess is that some of the objections may be similar to the ones we heard in 2001 as well. But I think the data that we have today, again, because of the work of Mike and Ruth particularly and others, that the data will help propel these issues forward. Quite honestly, I just want to get on the record that my support for both of these pieces of legislation, I think that it is important that we understand what it means to vote and the value of the vote, and that we're careful about who has that opportunity. And I think that House Bill 2583 requiring the fact that we're going to have citizens vote, I think that's really, really important. The issue as it relates to on House Bill 2551 that we don't open those secrecy ballots days and days ahead of the fact that days ahead of the election day itself, I think, is a way to safeguard the elections process as well. You may hear that this is going to cost extra money, that they don't have the manpower, the staff to open all these ballots on the election day. You'll hear that it may cost an extra burden to some of the county clerks to have to wait. And I would say my response to that would be, what value do we place in our election process and the sanctity of that process? And is it worth some inconvenience, maybe some added costs to the system overall? And those are the issues that I ask you to judge and judge carefully and weigh carefully. And I appreciate this committee's willingness to tackle these issues. I expect that this committee will do a great job in deciphering the correct public policy here. And as we look backwards to the time when we didn't have an all vote by mail process, when we had a at the polls process and the absentee process, one of the arguments for going to an all vote by mail process was it was going to save money, and I believe that it has saved money. But you ought to look at maybe taking part of that savings and saying, let's make sure that our system is a system that we can all count on and is one that accurately and effectively protects the vote. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity just to really chime in and say I think these are worthy of discussion and debate, and my hope is that if there's issues that come up that maybe need to be amended or whatnot, that you'll work them. And my hope is that you can find the votes to move them out of this committee to the full Senate, to the full House, and eventually that they can come over to the Senate so we can work on them as well. With that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon. So thank you very much.
Senator, sir, I appreciate you being with us today, and I do know that you have, unfortunately, a sick child at home. That you do need to get home, and so I don't expect you to stick around. I will not be offended if you have to leave, but I do appreciate
thank you, Mr. Chair.
You taking the time to be here.
Appreciate it.
Senator.
Thanks.
Could I ask Senator Starr a question or two?
No.
Before he escapes.
You're going to grab
Representative Greenlee, please.
Thank you very much, Bruce. You've been thinking about this for some time. I wonder if you could just help me a little bit on 2551. And it talks about several things that can only be done by an elections official, and other times an election official in performance of duties. Excuse me, I have a rather dumb question. What's an elections official?
You know, that is a good question. I think it's one that the committee ought to address. In my mind, it can be more than the county clerk in that when there are folks that go to work in the elections office, it's my recollection that those folks I'm not sure they have to swear to uphold, or there's certain requirements that they have to meet in order to be elections officials or work in the process. You know, that would be a good question for the county clerks, quite frankly.
When we get Secretary of State here too,
he might know.
We can pursue it a little.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any further questions of Senator Starr?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Colleagues, as you folks know, because you deal with me on a daily basis, we run a very tight committee, adhering to our time frames that are allotted. This committee is scheduled from 3 to 5 today and will last from 3 to 5. With that being said, I do not want to stifle the process of those folks that have turned out here to testify. We will be allotting, we'll just divvy it up for each bill. We will have 40 minutes for each bill to discuss. And what I plan on doing is, and if this is agreeable with the committee, if it's not, I know that you will not hesitate to let me know. What I would like to do is have a proponent of the bill and then an opponent of the bill testify, keeping the testimony to no more than 5 minutes. I think should be doable to make your points. It always has been in the past. That being said, I know there are people that are signed up to testify on more than one bill. I will give, based on the signatures that I'm seeing first in order, going down that way, and I will then go on to the next bill, starting from and not allowing those that have signed up to testify more than once, as long as the time is not given. So if that's clear, I just want to be open that we're hopefully going to have equal number of people testifying on each bill, both in favor of it and in opposition to it. So in the name of time, I hope that's agreeable with the committee. Thank you.
I would just like to maybe add a comment. Would that include questions that we are asking them? Sometimes that might take a little bit longer than 5 minutes, and is somebody going to be keeping the time?
I have a timer, and it's my watch, and I'm sure that if the committee has a question, they can do so in a very pointed way and get it done.
Okay.
I just want to understand the rules correctly. So if someone is signed up to testify in opposition to two of the bills, should they combine the testimony as Senator Starr did?
Yeah, we have yes, but thank you for your question. We have both of the bills right now are open for a public hearing. We're on the record right now, so everything that is said is on the record. We have both House Bill 2551 and House Bill 2583 are open for public testimony right now. Senate Bill 162 we will do next. So essentially what I'm doing is I'm going to combine these two, joining that time for a total of 80 minutes of discussion for these two bills. I will work my way down the list, going one for, one against. When that time is up, I apologize in advance. We're not going to get to everybody. We will then go to Senate Bill 162. If there are those that have already testified on either of the two aforementioned bills, they will go to the bottom of the list for Senate Bill 162, giving those that have not testified the first opportunity on Senate Bill 162. I hope this is fair. In the name of time, I think it's the best option that we have. Representative March.
Mr. Chair, I just also wanted to point out to the audience that you can either mail or email comments to the committee, and committee administrator will make sure that each member of the committee receives a copy of that, and it will be entered into the record, as I understand it, sir.
That is absolutely correct. So if you have written testimony that you plan on just coming up and reading to the committee, I would encourage that maybe you submit the testimony to Annetta over here, so that just in the name of time's sake, that we don't have to, you know, we can read it and not just have it be read to us. So it will be inserted for the record. So you will be on record. You may not have been heard on that microphone, but you will be on the record. And if you want to email any comments, we will be more than happy to insert them in the record. And you can do that at rep.stevemarch.org.
State.or.us,
and everybody's the same, just insert name in one word, rep.greenlick or mitchgreenlick.rep. Skip me.
send them all the kids.
That's right. So with that, I hope that those rules of engagement are fair to everybody, and I apologize in consideration of everyone's time. So thank you. So at this time, I will call forward Mike Balanese.
Chair Kitz, members of the committee, thank you for coming to North Plains and to your staff. I'll speak to House Bill 2583. The requirement for proof of citizenship to register to vote. Senator Starr was correct. We did this 4 years ago. We did it 2 years ago, and we're back again. And in there, I'm going to provide just a little bit of background, and the technical parts of this will follow. When we first did this 4 years ago in 2001 in the spring, it obviously was prior to 9/11, September 11th. I happened to be in the Middle East on a ship in the Mediterranean on 9/11, and I wanted to be home. This is where I wanted to be. What does that have to do with voting? Well, it just goes to show in the last 4 years dramatically what has occurred. Two of the terrorists who flew planes on 9/11 got their flight training by using, for part of their identity, to prove their identity, voter registration cards, a precinct card. Since 9/11, just this past November, proof of citizenship was voted on by Proposition 200 in the state of Arizona. It passed. So the state of Arizona is now going to require that you prove your citizenship before you register to vote. That was a citizen initiative Proposition 200. It was also deemed to be constitutional, which was an issue that was brought up, I believe, the first time we brought this to the legislature. I have been asked, and you may wonder, why don't we do an initiative instead of bringing it to the legislature? My first reason is just this. It would cost us, as citizens, several hundreds of thousands of dollars to put an initiative out on the street. We would collect the signatures. Uninformal polls show that this runs 60 to 70% wherever we go and talk about this. 60 to 70% of the people say, that's a no-brainer. It's already in the state of Oregon's constitution. We haven't done an initiative because the chief opponent of this bill, who you will hear from, is the gatekeeper of the initiative process, and that is a hindrance, as we see it. One minute on this bill.
Testimony.
Total?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for the heads up. I'm going to talk, others will talk about the secrecy envelope. I want to show one thing about House Bill 2551, which speaks to the drop boxes. I have a picture here of a drop box that's behind the county building in Washington County, not 5 minutes from here. The picture was taken Tuesday afternoon. It's an old mailbox. It's sitting out at the curb. And I'm going to read, this is out of the Oregon Vote by Mail Manual, December 5, 2003, issued by Secretary of State Bill Bradbury. And this is what he says about secure ballot boxes. Secure ballot boxes shall be within sight of an authorized person. Representative Greenlick, you asked what an election official is. This says an authorized person. I would ask, who's it authorized? Throughout the hours that the site is open to the public or secured in such a manner as to prevent tampering. Pretty hard to tamper with this, except that a match, liquids, anything can be dropped into that box because nobody is attending it.
Mike, please finish up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. The box shall be removed from public view at the end of each site workday and locked at a secure location, assuring the security of ballots. If somebody works swing shift and drops off their ballot at midnight, this box is sitting out in the dark, unattended, contrary to the vote-by-mail manual. Thank you, Representative Kitts and committee, again, for coming to North Plains.
Mike, thank you very much for your testimony. If you could pass the picture to Anetta, I would like to look at it, as I'm sure the committee would like to inspect it a little bit.
I will provide any of my information. Of course, you're getting a ton of emails from me. I didn't provide written testimony today. You will get written testimony. If you'd like to see the picture, I will leave it, and you can have it.
Thank you, Mike. Moving down, the opposition, and I apologize, I'm having a hard time making out the name, from PSU/OSU, Oley? Windler? Did I say that correctly? Please state your name for the record. You have 5 minutes.
Thank you. Chair Kitts and members of the committee, my name is Dee Wendler, and I'm the Director of Business Affairs at Portland State University. I'm here today to talk about the impact of House Bill 2583 on the institutions of the Oregon University system and to explain a federal mandate that we must comply with for financial aid for our students. As you know, the National Voter Registration Act of 1993, also known as Motor Voter Act, requires state agencies to offer voter registration. And this law requires Oregon's public universities to provide their students with voter registration forms, assist them with completing those forms, and then to forward the completed forms. In 1998, the voter registration requirement became part of the program participation agreement for awarding financial aid. And under this mandate, schools are required to make a good faith effort to ensure that voter registration materials are available to the students, to make the information understandable to them as we help them complete the forms. And the federal financial aid could be at risk if, in fact, we don't fulfill that requirement. We take our responsibilities under Motor Voter very seriously. To fulfill these mandates, we must not only inform our students of the opportunities, but we must encourage and facilitate the registration process. Universities implement Motor Voter in a variety of ways. At PSU, when a student comes forward to pay a bill or to register in the lobby, we actually have forms available to them, people there who can help them fill out a form if they need that, and a drop box where they can leave the form, and then we'll forward it on. The most important impact, we think, of House Bill 2583 is that it's in conflict with the intent of the Motor Voter Act. This act was passed to encourage young people to register to vote and to participate in that electoral process. And 2583 adds a barrier for a first-time voter in that they have to attach certifications to show that they are a citizen. Many of our students register on the campus for the very first time. And for most of those students, the additional requirement that they attach proof of citizenship would, we believe, be a significant enough barrier that they would never complete the process. Many students don't have ready access to their birth certificates or passports. Those are often held by parents in other cities. If a student's moved to Oregon from another state, getting their birth certificate is also another barrier. They have to go across state lines or actually order one, which can take quite a bit of time. We understand that the county clerk bears the burden of notifying a student who has neglected to attach the proof of citizenship. However, from experience, we know that tracking down those students and actually getting them to submit those documents can be quite a process, especially with such a mobile society. We believe the first-time registration of our students will be severely limited if the process becomes too burdensome for them. And as I stated before, Oregon public universities take their responsibility to register the students under Motor Voter very seriously. House Bill 2583 will have the effect of making the process of registering them to vote for the first time confusing and cumbersome. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in front of you today. I've tried to keep my comments brief. Are there any questions I could answer for the committee?
Well, first of all, thank you for testifying for the committee, and thank you for being here. Really appreciate it. Unfortunately, I have no way to turn off my phone and keep time, so I'm just going to have to hit the vibrate button every time somebody calls me, so I apologize. I have one question that comes to mind.
Certainly.
The intent of the motor voter, which is a great intent, is to register as many people to vote as possible, and you're tasked with the due diligence of making a concerted effort to get people to vote, and I understand that. Is it not possible for students to request a birth certificate, call home? I don't know, so I'm asking the question. What is the process by which someone could obtain an original birth certificate and register to vote?
Chair Kitts, certainly they could request those documents either from their home state or, and assuming it's Oregon, in Oregon, or actually contact their parents if they don't have them and get those out of safety deposit boxes, et cetera. The concern I think that we have is whether students would actually take that extra step. They're so busy with classes trying to, you know, fulfill sure. those requirements, whether they would actually do that or whether they would just choose not to register.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This time I'll call Ruth Bendel in favor.
Good afternoon. My name is Ruth Bendel, 10980 Southwest Muirwood Drive, Portland 97225. I'd like to take the opportunity to first address House Bill 2583, and I'd like to rebut the statement that was just made. I'm glad that I came after that.
Ruth, you have 5 minutes.
Yes, and I'll be fast.
Do with it what you want.
Yes. I would say to you that if financial aid is attached to a requirement for voter registration, I think that most students who need financial aid are going to make the effort to ask their parents, their hometown, whoever they need to ask for a copy of their birth certificate. That's number one. Number two, I want to make it absolutely clear that it is not just the Oregon Constitution that defines that an elector means a citizen who is 18 years or older and has resided in the state for 6 months or more. I think that in a post 9/11 era, when we know that there are people who wish us ill and they are trying to infiltrate not just the country but our systems as well, I think that requiring proof of eligibility is a basic 101. And I would like to say that I am deeply concerned by the way the current system, both of voter registration and election system, is operated. I think there are just too many holes in the system and that it absolutely invites abuse. I'd like to point that concern to the continuation of the system under a centralized voter registration system. I understand that the proof of ID is going to be just a copy of a driver's license and the last four digits of a social security number. Neither of these prove eligibility to vote. Children at the age of 5 to go to school get a social security number. It's mandatory. And number two, a driver's license is issued to people from the age of 16 on. Again, not an eligibility issue. Furthermore, we have in Hillsborough, in Washington County, a serious problem that will be heard in court in August. Now, it's been delayed a further year. And that is that up to 70,000 falsified driver's licenses have been issued by DMEs. These are satellite DMV agencies. And to rely on driver's licenses is just a fallacy. I want to tell you that anything short of being an eligible voter is something that dilutes the strength of the eligible voter's vote. So if we hear people complaining that their vote doesn't count, and we have a system which makes it possible for people to register their cats and dogs and that's what we have at the moment, we're not doing anything. In fact, I didn't bring the list with me, but I do have it at home, and that is the 4,000 people in Washington County that had the gall to disregard the request for proof of ID when they registered by mail, and again disregarded a further letter that was sent to them, yet they had their ballot counted on election day. And to me, I call that the cats and dogs list, because if somebody can't be bothered the second time, then I have a problem. I'm going to move now to House Bill 2551. You've already heard Mike Balanese express concern about the ballot drop sites. I'm concerned about the fact that people whose backgrounds we know very little about, election boards, have the right, have been empowered to remove ballots from secrecy envelopes up to 7 days before the election. The observers, the people that are volunteering their time as poll watchers, are kept several feet away from where this is happening, behind crime scene tape. They're also not given proper access to viewing the signatures on the outer ballot envelope. So we have a system which has lost the checks and balances as far as the actual handling of ballots after they've been cast either at a ballot drop site or in the box at the county elections office or been delivered by mail. Again, if we cannot count on the integrity of the voting system, then we've lost our portals to freedom. Because, again, I say to you, there are people in this country that are now aware of the opportunity for abuse that our election system currently offers. I thank you for listening.
Ruth, thank you. I feel like I'm at a wedding over here. For, against. Ruth has given that speech one time before and does a great job every time she gives it. Whether you agree with it or not, she knows her speech. So thank you, Ruth. At this time, David Johnson, please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is David Johnson. I'm a volunteer with Oregon Action in Portland. That's a nonprofit organization that supports the rights of low-income and people of color. And we are in opposition to House Bill 2583 because we think that it is another barrier that will continue to keep folks from getting into the voting process. And over the Get Out the Vote campaign for the presidency, I volunteered to register folks in Portland and surrounding areas. And it was hard enough to get legal U.S. citizens and folks that were able to register to vote to register and vote. And another barrier would just make that process even harder. I understand what some of the other folks are saying in regards to the security of America and the security of the people of America, which that is completely correct also. But I do think that the government of America and the government of states like Oregon and the rest of the states are doing things to protect those issues since 9/11 and even before 9/11. The processes in the state of Oregon have been working just fine over the years. And I really do think that this would be just another barrier because we have been good about the processes of registering folks and that sort of thing. So what they're saying is completely legitimate, and I respect it. But by the same token, we've been doing a good job. As House Bill 2551, I also think we have been doing a good job in regards to how we've been handling our vote-by-mail process. The folks that have been doing it have been needing the time in order to open up a week before the actual election date, and at this point they have been doing a good job also. And I believe that that process has worked fine okay also. I've volunteered to do some of that type of work too, and I've seen it firsthand, and it did work out fine. So that is Oregon Action's position, and I thank you for your time.
David, thank you. Are there any questions?
Actually, I do have a question.
David, do you mind? And I realize we're all passionate, but if we keep the clapping to a bare minimum, I
all right, sorry.
The against people can clap one time and get it out of their system, and then we're even, okay? See that? It's bipartisan.
All right.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Chair Kitz. Now, you said you volunteered to get, like, attend different events, maybe to get people to sign up to vote. Did you get any training, or did you?
Yeah, Oregon Action has a leadership program that they do on a voluntary basis. Folks can come in that either don't know the process of politics or don't know the process of how to do what we're doing here today, and Oregon Action will take you through a complete, I think that was a 12-week training process. This is actually my first time ever doing this, and I'm sitting here doing it from their training. So it's something that they do. They do train you over a period of time. They do show you the political process and give you the opportunity to stand up for yourself.
Thank you.
I guess more specifically, yeah, having to do with signing up people to vote.
Yes. You do
what
have
kind
to go
of training
through.
Is involved there?
We went through a week-long training process in order to show that we're nonpartisan and ask folks the proper questions in regards to if they are citizens or if they're felons and what their rights are as felons to be able to vote in the state of Oregon, exactly what the process would be after registering and getting their registration card and then going down actually and signing a ballot and voting. But, yes, we did do a week-long training course for that, specifically for the registration process.
And that was from Oregon?
From Oregon Action.
Action. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
At this time, we'll call Jerry Bitz.
Representative Kitz and other representatives here. My name is Jerry Bitz. I'm from Clackamas County. I attended the LC hearings in the Capitol building. I didn't have a chance to put my 2 cents worth in, so I'm here, might say my 2 bits worth, since my name is Bitz. Put my two, and now, and with inflation what it is, it's 2 bits is about worth what 2 cents used to be. So
that's right.
I have been working with the Election Integrity Project the last couple of years in Clackamas County. I put together a team of people to do poll watching at the elections office in Clackamas County, and we started in the May primary of 2002. I was concerned 2 years before that about opening the ballots early because of a vote by write-in. We ran a write-in campaign there, and when you're opening those ballots and looking at them 7 to 10 days ahead of time, it's really obvious to see if there's a write-in campaign going on, and it can be changed in the 7 to 10 days if that becomes observed. And it might not be so easy to see those little chads punched out, but some people are pretty clever at doing things like that. So I'm really concerned of the integrity of our elections in the way things have been handled, opening those ballots early. No other state does that. Only we do that because of our vote by mail. And it doesn't take any longer and no more people to count these votes after Election Day than it does before. So how is it going to cost more money? You have to hire people to count them after the election just as well as before. The only reason, there would be a good reason for someone to open the ballots 7 to 10 days early is the enhancing of them, and that should be absolutely against the law to tamper with those ballots at all. It's against the law for me to tamper with my husband's ballot or my aunt's or my niece if I get to the point where I need someone to take care of me in the next 10 years or so. I'm working my way in that direction. If I have a strong opinion who I want for president, I don't want a niece who has another opinion to tamper with my ballot, and it is against the law. And I notice here on this House Bill 2551, ORS 254470, it doesn't say anything about paragraph 6A. that that should be included, and it's the ballot or ballot label shall contain the following warning. Any person who, by use of force or other means, unduly influences an elector to vote in any particular manner or to refrain from voting is subject, upon conviction, to imprisonment or to a fine or both. How is it, then, that when my envelope that I signed is done away with and now my ballot goes off in its little secret envelope, how is it that it's opened by people that are total strangers and they have a right to alter that ballot in any way, to put a mark on it of any kind? We're looking at adding four words to paragraph 6A of 254470. Add the words or alters any ballot. Any person who alters any ballot is subject upon conviction to imprisonment or to a fine or both. I think it should be against the law.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question, please?
Representative Greenlink, please.
Thank you. I'm not sure I understood what you were worrying about, especially if there was a write-in campaign going on.
Write-in votes are easily detected when they're processing the ballots. We were able to watch this, and you can see who write-ins are. For instance, the write-in campaign that we were doing, we didn't have anyone running for a position, so we decided to do a write-in for that person. We really believe that we did a write-in. We asked 120 people to do write-ins for someone. And we really believe that was spoken outside of the elections office and that it influenced a write-in campaign from the other party who had friends in our party. You see what I'm saying?
If
follow up.
If I have a friend in your party and my friend tells me that there's going to be a write-in campaign, then I don't understand what it has to do with the secrecy.
Okay, we asked 120 people to do a write-in campaign for a person so that there would be a candidate.
I understand that.
To run for the other opposing party to our party had friends in our party, mm-hmm. who then went out and asked people from our party to vote for their candidate.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfectly legitimate. Unless they see the handwriting here on these ballots being processed 7 to 10 days before election day, it gives them 7 to 10 days to go out and to change this. You see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jerry. Barbara Anderson.
Representatives, I just heard about this on the radio today, so
please
I'm not
state your
terribly,
name for the record.
I'm sorry, Barbara Anderson, Portland, Multnomah County. I just heard about this on the radio, so I'm not terribly prepared, but I thought I would put in my 2 cents worth like everyone else has. In the olden days, I worked on the election committees and campaigns back when we had the ballots. And when the election closed at 8 o'clock, we separated the ballots. It's no big deal. It's better to do it right than to do it 7 to 10 days in advance and have it be wrong or whatever. And on the issue of proving your citizenship before you register to vote the first time, I don't understand what the big deal about that is either. I had to do it. Every young person I know probably has a passport or is going to go traveling, and you have to have your birth certificate before you do that. It's not that hard to get a birth certificate. They can have them faxed.
Barbara, I got to interrupt you just for 1 second. You have down here that you are against the bill.
Oh, no, I must have put it wrong. I'm sorry. I'm for.
Now I got to give you the other side 2 in a row. Otherwise, I'm going to get
yelled
at.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's
you again.
You're not the one that gets in trouble when that happens. I am.
Well, not you. I'm sorry.
Please continue.
That's pretty much all I have to say. It's not that hard to get a birth certificate. It's not that hard to prove you're a citizen. Voting is a privilege. It's not a right. It's a privilege that we have to protect. And it's. I don't see the big deal at all.
Thank you. Appreciate it. For it. How about Jerry Hansen? Mickey, you want to, the three of you want to come up together since y'all signed up? Now the other side's going to think I went the other way. Mickey, thank you for being here today. I really appreciate that. Hopefully you've heard some of the things that have been said. Thank you, Cletus. Hopefully you've heard some of the things that have been said, and if there's any discrepancies or inaccuracies, feel free to clarify or misinterpret. So please state your name for the record. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Hansen. I'm the Director of Assessment and Taxation of Washington County, which includes the Election Division. And with me is the County Clerk in Yamhill County, Jan Coleman, and the Election Manager in Washington County, Mickey Cowie. Mickey just got back from Kyrgyzstan to monitor an election there. She got back yesterday. So she's dedicated to this work, and we all are. I think, in general, what I'd like to, the most important thing I heard today was, that was an error, is voting is definitely a right. It's not a privilege. A privilege can be taken away by the government. Privilege would be like a driver's license. Voting is a right for every citizen. And that's a very important concept, I think, to keep in mind. On House Bill 2583, there are two important sections there. The first one is the requirement of evidence of citizenship. I'm not sure that it's proof of citizenship. It doesn't say proof. It says that evidence, and it specifies what that is. And I think the bottom line for that one, the county clerks don't support that concept. We definitely support the concept that voters are required to be citizens, are required to be 18 years of age. The difficulty is how we determine that and what level of proof we want. And so knowing what we know, we believe that would definitely be a significant obstacle in a number of cases. And I want Jan and Mickey to comment anytime they feel like it here, because I'm going to get through this as quickly as possible. The bottom line on providing a birth certificate, most people don't have them. Most people will then have to contact the state vital statistics where they were born. It'll cost them between $15 to $30 to get that copy of that birth certificate. In Oregon, it's $18. A lot of people will say, first of all, they'll come to our counter or they'll go to the DMV and they'll say, I want to register to vote. They won't be able to. It'll no longer be one-stop shopping. It'll be about three-stop shopping because they're going to have to go get their birth certificate in most cases. Most people do not have a passport. I'm the passport agent of Washington County, and I handle about 25 a day. And I definitely know the obstacles you run into when you try to get a passport. It's not as easy as people think. And we don't have time to go into that. I can just tell you that as I know it to be the case. So I think I'd just like Jan and Mickey to comment if they have any comments.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, will we get 5 minutes each as everybody else is?
Yes, that's fine.
The second provision in House Bill 2583 has to do with, you know, another thing that seems like a pretty good idea, and it would be a good idea, it's just a matter of execution. It indicates that registration does not occur for a person newly registered to the state for the first time until the proof of identification is received by them from the clerk. And that's a good idea, but I'll tell you what happens in like a November 2nd, 2004 election. We get about, in Washington County, about 2,000 registration applications per day for about a month, and there's no way we'll be able to process those and give notification to all those folks within 7 days, and not with the staffing we have. It just cannot happen that way. And what I want to do is just close out on that testimony and offer Written testimony from our clerk's legislative chair, just for the record, and ask if Mickey or Dan has any comments.
On 2583, I think the written comments that are being presented by our legislative chair pretty well cover our concerns. I don't think that it's necessarily that clerks are totally against this. We just feel that the bill has some loopholes that need to be worked through. The one thing that I might comment, and you heard Portland State comment, you know, regardless of what you might say, that it is nothing to get these documents, you'd be amazed at how much people will not do something because it takes a little more of their effort. And that's kind of the bottom line. And
Can we have order? I understand people may disagree with the testimony. You'll have your time.
We have this problem now with people having to present their ID, which seems like a simple thing. And we feel that, too. But I received one letter from one of my constituents that was going to take me to court because I asked for this proof of ID. Another one, I got a very expletive one of my letters back during the general election because I asked for this ID. You know, every county is carrying a number of these people that we've sent numerous letters to that just simply aren't following through with the ID. So it's not to say that, you know, it's just the way people are.
Thank you, Jan. Mickey, do you have anything you want to add at this time? I really appreciate you guys being here and taking the time out of your day. Representative Dalto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, I just had a question, you know, about the logistics of registering people in a hotly contested race like the one this past November, where you have both of the major political parties doing the very best to register as many people as possible, and I'm sure that extends to the other parties in Oregon as well. And so you're talking about a situation where you have 2,000 registrations coming a day, maybe more, maybe less, but really a high stream of registrations headed your way. And so if you were to, for example, have the citizenship information as part of those registrations, how would that – so let me clarify. So if they included the citizenship that's proposed under this bill and people are mailing in their registrations – how would that impact your ability to get everybody registered and get a ballot out by election time?
I could comment on it, Representative. I think if I understand it correctly, this thing states that a person is not registered until that proof is there. So if it's not attached, as in terms of any kind of document, we would not be able to even register this person. We would send it back. Does that answer?
No, it does. And so somebody from my political party, for example, who wanted to be registered in the presidential election, it's possible that in Washington County you wouldn't be able to register them because you couldn't physically process.
Right.
Why not add the additional staff to do that?
Well, no, because the document is not there. So I understand it to read is that the registration form and the document must come together for a complete registration.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
And so if you have all the information at hand at that particular moment when you receive the registration, are you able to sort of strengthen your registration staff to be able to get people signed up?
We would be able to register the person. I'm not too sure if we're to scan the document or somehow attach it to the voter's record. I'm not clear on any of that portion on this bill.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Question?
Yes, I do.
Representative Greenlight.
You raise a very critical point about how sacred the right to vote is. And our history has been replete with apparently obvious ways to slow down the ability of certain segments of our population to exercise that right to vote in elections. And we've had a lot of Supreme Court decisions on how far you can, how many barriers you can put before a citizen can exercise his right to vote. I wonder if you could share, you've obviously thought about this for some time, you share this question about how big a barrier is a barrier before we're infringing on this very sacred right of American citizens.
Well, I know I talked to Jerry earlier about this, and it seems like if you place an undue amount of hardship on someone to register, it does seem to infringe on people's right. Whether proving a document is that hardship, meaning if they have to go out and pay $18 to $30 for a document to register, $75 for a passport, whatever the cost might be, I think that would be an extra.
Mr. Chair, if you would, I'd like to answer that. I think that cutoff line is not bright, and it's determined by what five judges in the Supreme Court say it is, and it's been an ongoing evolutionary process over our history, and there have been, and I'm no expert on that, but I do see it as a significant issue because we can't assume it's okay for a few people to have a burden placed on them. We really can't assume that in this system. And I think that's way you have to change your thinking about it. It's okay because most people don't have any problem. I don't think that's the standard. I think when some people have a significant problem getting registered to vote, it's a problem for the system. And I think with birth certificates, there's a whole lot of situations. We have about 25 applications for passports at Washington County at my counter each day of the week, and about one of them each day is really problematic. There's a whole variety of reasons people cannot come up with a birth certificate. I mean, I talked to one of the ladies that handles that job just recently, and she was saying, I was just joking around. The guy couldn't give me a birth certificate. I said, well, what's the problem? Were you dropped off on somebody's doorstep? And he said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I was. And that's a true story. He did not have the ability to get one. He was an orphaned person. Now, there are ways to show that you were or prove that you were born in the U.S., but it's really difficult if you're a naturalized citizen. Your parents are no longer alive. You may not have the documents you need to do that. It's not a simple thing in a significant, maybe 5% of the cases.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if we could I wonder if we could ask our legal counsel to brief us on this particular issue on where that line is and how we consider it as we're considering this bill when we get back in the cabin.
I think that's entirely appropriate, and I will look into that on Monday. Sir, you're welcome, Representative. One quick question and slash comment that I would make, Jen, is that if you have concerns or you see loopholes in the bill, I would encourage you to have amendments drafted. We can always address amendments, vote them up or down. But if you have suggestions that you feel would make the bill a better bill, the committee is entirely open to that as well. So I would encourage you to do that. Thank you, guys.
Would you like us, or can you give us any time to talk about House Bill 2551?
I would love to, but your time has expired.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Billy Goodwin? And again, I'm sorry, before you start, Jerry, Mickey, if you have other comments that you're not able to verbalize here, please know that we'll take them in writing for the record. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dalto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And may I also suggest that perhaps we can keep the record open on these two measures, and that if anybody has, any member of the public has in public comments that they were not able to get on the record, that we could accept them and enter them into the record.
We covered that in the first 30 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Please.
I'm the representative. Thank you for the opportunity of coming this afternoon.
I live in Multnomah County. We are a government of law, not of men or women. And it's the law that says we must be a citizen of the United States in order to vote. We need to really enforce that. I'm in favor of encouraging new voters to vote. It's a wonderful feeling to vote. But a little bit of a hardship, like finding proof of citizenship, is nothing compared to the hardship that the men and women that have been in service have gone through to help maintain this right for us to vote. And I think that it's our duty to do what we can on our end to continue putting forth a little more effort to have people vote. Anything worth doing is worth going through some barriers and hurdles. I might add that my son had some misfortune about 5 years ago and needed a little bit of help. Before he could get very far in the system of Oregon, he had to provide his birth certificate. So if we're going to give some help, it wasn't too much of a hurdle or a problem for him to have to do that. And I really feel strongly that people need to put forth the effort if they want to vote.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Seeing none, thank you. Mm-hmm. At this time, I think we'll take about a 4-minute recess, stand up, stretch legs, and then when we come back, we'll have the Secretary of State testify on these bills. The committee will stand at ease.
Okay.
Committee will come back in order. Annette, am I on?
Sure.
Am I on? Mitch, you ready?
Yep.
Thank you. Committee on Election Rules will reconvene. We are honored to have the Secretary of State with us today. He came all the way from Salem to be here and testify. I appreciate that. I have a wonderful working relationship with the Secretary of State, and I appreciate him being out here and testifying on this issue. Mr. Secretary.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Could we maybe open the hearing on SB 162 as well? I don't know if we did.
Representative March, I have talked with the Secretary of State. He will be testifying on the two bills that are open currently.
Thank you.
And he will take as much time as he may consume. I'm not going to lay the ground rules to him. He lays them to me. So.
You might not get your certified next time.
Lost in the mail.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's a great pleasure to be actually out of Salem.
Yes.
Dealing with these issues. So I appreciate the tour you're going to make. I confess I probably won't be at your committee when you're in Pendleton. But
you're welcome if you are.
I appreciate it. So I want to start talking about House Bill 2583. And I'm here to express my opposition to House Bill 2583. As Secretary of State and the Chief Elections Officer for Oregon, one of the most important duties I have is to make sure that as many Oregonians as possible have the opportunity to exercise their right to vote. Now, there are a lot of ways that my office works to achieve that goal. We conduct voter outreach. We provide citizens with information about how to register and cast their ballot. We also work hard to make sure that there are no unnecessary barriers that would prevent eligible voters from registering or voting. And that's really what brings me here to North Plains today. This bill is a solution in search of a problem. There is absolutely no...
I warned you.
There's absolutely no evidence of a widespread attempt by non-citizens to register and vote in Oregon. Under current federal law, citizens who send their voter's registration card by mail include a photocopy of their identification indicating their current name and address. And at the bottom of every registration card, the citizen is required to sign an affidavit that they are indeed a U.S. citizen. Now, it's important to note that falsely swearing citizenship on the voter registration form is already a Class C felony. So the issue here isn't whether Oregonians must be United States citizens to vote. That is already clearly established by law. The issue is, by enacting onerous ID requirements, House Bill 2583 would discourage eligible citizens from registering and voting. This bill would be devastating to voter registration drives, as most citizens, I don't know any citizens, that walk around with a passport, a birth certificate, or a naturalization document in their pockets. And nobody I know walks around with a photocopier to make copies of those documents so that they can submit them for voter registration. We should be doing everything we can to encourage eligible citizens to register, not making it harder for those folks to do so. Now, in addition, there are really significant problems with Section 4, Paragraph 5 of this bill. It specifies that voter registration occurs on the date the confirmation notice is mailed by the county. This provision, combined with the constitutional 20-day voter registration cutoff, is a formula for an equal protection challenge under the United States Constitution. Let me just explain. This will lead to citizens who act the same way being treated differently, being treated unequally. Imagine a citizen that registers to vote in Polk County 24 days before an election. The Polk County clerk is up to date, and the card is processed timely, and the registration card is mailed 21 days before the election. They met the constitutional registration deadline, hence a new voter. Another citizen mails a registration card at the same moment to the Marion County clerk, where there is, because they get real busy, there is a five-day backlog. That citizen is who put his registration in the mail at the same time, that citizen is mailed a card 18 days before the election and is, under this bill, ineligible to vote. That is the very definition of unequal treatment. Effectively, this bill means that the registration deadline could be moved back from 21 to 29 days depending on how busy the county is, which is information that is really not readily available to voters. So they don't know what the deadline is. It also changes the registration deadline from a date that the voter knows and that we can talk to people about, and also a date that the voter is responsible for meeting, to one unknown to the voter and, frankly, out of the voter's control. If enacted, House Bill 2583 would have devastating consequences for our electoral system and for our democracy by actively discouraging voter registration and voter participation. If you're going to take measures that create hurdles for voters, suppress registration, and potentially treat different registrants differently, you should have a pretty serious problem that you're trying to solve. The court will require that. House Bill 2583 does not even solve a small, real problem. The simple truth is that this bill is unnecessary at best and unconscionable at worst. And I respectfully urge the committee to reject House Bill 2583.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Are there any questions of the Secretary of State? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. You mentioned that a person is signing an affidavit when on the bottom of their registration. Are you aware of anybody getting prosecuted under this law?
We have a couple of cases every year or two. We're currently prosecuting two cases for people who were not citizens of the United States and voted in Oregon.
Follow up.
How was it discovered? How was that discovered?
I don't actually know the specific details of how it was discovered, but I do know that there are two prosecutions going on right now for people who are not citizens voting. And this is not the first year. That's gone on for a number of years. We've had a couple of cases every election cycle.
Follow up?
Actually, it has to do with a slightly different subject. You talked about equal protection and how, due to no fault of the voter,
right,
they could be caused not to be registered because they haven't been sent a card within the 21 day
period. In the 21 period. Days.
I was just thinking, I don't know if this is similar or not, but I think of some of the overseas ballots that get sent right when they should be sent to the overseas voter, and they send it immediately, right, you know, return it back, and due to no fault of their own, the mail is really slow getting to the elections office. Though it's postmarked plenty of time before the election, those votes are not counted if they you know, are received at the elections office after the deadline. Do you see any similarities or correlation there? Do you think that that should be changed, perhaps?
Oregon has basically always gets their overseas ballots out 45 days before an election. Everybody is treated equally that way. And then there is a challenge for some overseas citizens to get their ballots back. We have basically adopted a policy in Oregon that says ballots have to be back to the election staff by 8 p.m. on election day for them to be counted. There are a lot of reasons for that, one of which is that probably a third of the letters you get back that are based on postmark, you can't read the postmark. So it's really creates a rather uncertain situation. So yes, there has been some, there is some difficulty with that, but no, we don't see any reason to change it because people are basically treated by the government very equally.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, I have a question. Representative Greenland.
Apparently people don't take too seriously this notion that voting is really a right. And I wonder if you could talk about how the courts have, and I ask maybe we can get a legal counsel opinion on this, how courts have balanced the question of putting barriers up. When is it appropriate to put barriers up to prevent people, citizens, from exercising the right to vote, and when is it not appropriate? Do you have some sense on how that balance goes?
I actually confess to you that I do not. Generally, I could give you a general statement, which is that the courts always require, if you're going to, like, for example, the right of free speech, if you're going to, through governmental action, in some way limit free speech, you have to have a very compelling reason to do so. And it needs to be equally applied to, you know, to everybody in terms of everybody subject to that limitation. But it really raises it to a very high bar to get over. The courts consider that a very high standard that they're constantly balancing.
Thanks, follow, Mr. Chair.
Follow.
So the things like poll taxes and literacy tests and a variety of things have been outlawed as a barrier, and the things like motor registration and things like that have been put in where the intention has been to really enhance
voter registration
rather than present barriers.
Right.
We'll ask about the legal pieces of that, where that line, how that line is drawn.
I've learned a long time ago not to be the Attorney General.
Are you? So you're going to be comments on 2551 because I have a question on that one.
If you've got the, I would encourage in the name of time because we're about ready to close these hearings. If you have a specific question, I'm sure the Secretary of State is well versed enough in the topic to answer your question.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I was hoping to offer some testimony on 2551. If it fits with your schedule.
I will allow the testimony for the record. Then I will have to obviously limit questions on it.
Thank you.
Okay, is that?
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to testify briefly on 2551. The provisions of the bill, in Section 1, this bill delays processing ballots until 8:30 a.m. the day of the election. In Section 3, it effectively requires the county elections office to staff all drop boxes. Now, this bill fixes, this is another bill that fixes a problem that doesn't exist. There's no evidence that ballots from drop boxes have been tampered with. There's no evidence that ballots that have been, that the ballots have been tampered with once they are in the county elections office. I'm very proud of the county election staff and the job that they do. However, the problems the bill causes with this so-called solution are very real. The delay of opening the envelopes creates a delay in counting the votes and announcing the results. As we saw in Washington, the longer the voting tabulation takes, the less confidence voters have that the election was conducted fairly, openly, and accurately. But more importantly, by compressing the time the counties have to process the ballots, I mean, you are really compressing the time that they have to process the ballots. You don't get more security by doing that. You place huge pressure on the county staff to process the same workload in a much shorter period of time. The Dropbox provision creates an unfunded mandate to staff drop boxes. It's as if you required the post office to put a salaried postal worker at every mailbox. That's what this bill does. Without accompanying funding, it's more likely to eliminate drop boxes entirely, but there is a provision in the law that says every county will have, I think it's at least two drop boxes. So you'd have to amend that law if you don't want to create an unfunded mandate. Really, when you look at this, this creates a hardship on voters by making the election system really less accessible. My office and the County Clerks Association are in favor of making the system more accessible. The bottom line is that fixing this problem that doesn't exist decreases access for voters and undermines their confidence by increasing the time it takes to count votes. And I would urge your rejection of House Bill 2551.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, and thank you for your time being here today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Okay. Colleagues, I will be closing the public hearings on 2551 and 2558. It is 4:30. We're 10 minutes beyond time, so I'll make the necessary adjustments for Senate Bill 162. We will now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 162. Staff will read the summary.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 162 requires all elections held in the state of Oregon to be conducted by mail, deletes references to voting machines, polling places, polling place clerks, etc., from the Oregon Revised Statute, primarily from the OSR Chapter 2154.
Thank you. This time we'll call Bob Gang forward. Bob Gang?
My name is Bob Gang. I've lived here in the state of Oregon for 29 years, small business owner. Now we are talking on 162.
162.
I'm not prepared to do that, but I did have some comments on the other two. Can I make those comments?
Bob, you signed up on 162.
Yes. Elections held to be conducted by mail. The major concern I've got on that issue is it's actually tied into the other two as well as far as the overall issue of legitimacy in terms of making an election. First of all and foremost, my understanding is that these elections are for U.S. citizens who are residents of the state of Oregon. If I am not a resident, if I am a resident of the state of Oregon, but I am not a U.S. citizen, then I'm not entitled to vote. And I see no, in fact, if I can cast my ballot by mail, and I think this is taking away from those who want to go to a ballot box, which is how most elections are held, and cast in person their ballot, we're taking that right away from the people. We're talking about rights. Mr. Greenlick made a very strong issue on the basis of voting in this country is a right. It's also a privilege, but it is definitely a right, and it is a right that is granted to U.S. citizens, not visitors to this country, not illegals, to U.S. citizens who are registered in the state of Oregon. And as one very famous mayor said many years ago, tongue-in-cheek, we are in this state with all three of these bills. We're trying to correct the problem. We are heading for a situation where I think the famous mayor of Chicago once said, vote early and vote often. My son is a good example of that. He left home in 1987 for college, has not been back. But until 2 years ago in the 2002 election, I received a ballot. Now, this is a ballot by mail. I received a ballot for my son for 15 years, every election we had, because he was a registered voter in this state, and I simply tore it up, threw it away. But I could have used it. I'm wondering how many are doing the same thing. When we have vote by mail, it is a very dangerous situation, wide open to fraud. Because, as Ruth mentioned earlier, you know, we can have anybody registered, especially if they don't have to walk into a polling place to vote. Anybody can fill these ballots out and send them in. And there's very little security on this. So I have a very serious concern about the lack of security in our whole voting system, and I think we are leaving ourselves wide open to major fraud if we do not bring this situation under control, and it affects all political parties. This is not just an issue of one party or the other. All of us are affected by it because multiple registrations, illegal aliens, non-residents of the state, at the present time, especially using the ballot by mail, it's very easy. Very easy to vote in this state, very easy to register. Because we don't have to prove citizenship to register. Not really. And we need to make some major corrections and toughen up our laws requiring identification of the voter, that he is a or she is a registered individual, a resident of the country, a U.S. citizen, in order to vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Don McIntyre.
I believe he left.
David Jackson. We might get done early. Bonnie and Donnie Bishop. Oh, just you? Great. Please come forward.
Well, I'm not sure about concluding all of this bill since I arrived here to understand it fully, but I can address the matter of all voting by mail by a specific incident that happened as I was serving on a bank of phones during this last election.
I'd love you to do that, but if I could get you to state your name for the record first, I'd appreciate it.
It's Bonnie Bishop.
Thank you.
I received a telephone call in the evening, and it was a call from a worker in Multnomah County who was wanting to report voter fraud. And I took the information but told him that I really wasn't the one to, to handle the situation, but I would take the information and pass it on to someone who might address the matter. And the story goes like this. He said that a woman who ran a boarding house, and mainly they were students from Portland State and University of Portland, two of the students were approached by a political party representative registering whomever they could register. These two foreign students were encouraged by the person wanting to get them registered by offering them money. And the two students were convinced, finally, because of the need for their personal needs. They took the registration, this person took the registration, passed it on to whomever was handling that at that time for Multnomah County, and the ballots came to the house addressed to the students. The landlord, the lady in charge of the boarding house, interpreted or received them in the mail, saw that they were addressed to the two students living in her home. And she recognized that they were ballots and that she knew the students and knew that they were not citizens of this country. She then initiated a call, and that's the person who was calling me to expose this and have someone come and check this out. And so, to me, this is only, maybe it's only two students, but how many times has that happened throughout our state with just the vote by mail with no proof of citizenship? And that's all I have to offer. I am in support of this bill. Thank you.
1 second. Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bonnie, I didn't catch it. Are you an election official of any sort?
No, I was serving as a volunteer on a phone bank.
Okay. Follow-up. Did you encourage this person to contact the local county elections official or the Secretary of State's office?
What I did was I put them on hold and told them that I needed to get someone higher up the chain of command than a volunteer. And so I did. I sought out someone in the elections or the campaign office and referred the call to them. They took all the specific information, addresses and names and so forth.
So,
follow-up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The campaign office then did, what did they do with this information?
I don't know, sir, because I was continuing with other phone calls.
Okay. Thank you.
You're getting back to your volunteer duties.
Yes.
Thank you for being here. But Norman Terrell, am I saying that correctly?
Terrell, Mr.
Chair. Terrell, thank you.
Chair Kitts and members of the committee, my name is Norman Terrell, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to address Senate Bill 162. I am a member of the League of Women Voters of Oregon, And yes, Mr. Chair, men are invited to become members of the league. I'm also testifying on behalf of Margaret Knoll, our president, who is also present, but she asked me to testify in her place since I have expertise in this particular area.
Margaret, would you like to come up at all? Or?
The League is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization which promotes the informed involvement of citizens in government. We believe elections should be conducted in a manner that encourages voter participation. Under vote by mail, last November, Oregon had a 86.5% voter turnout, among the highest in the country. The League has been a proponent of vote by mail for two decades. The process worked well for Oregon when it was only used in local elections, and the addition of the primary and general elections has further proved its value. A study done by Priscilla Southwell, which I've given you a copy of her report from the University of Oregon, shows a strong preference for vote by mail among all voters, about 81%. Especially among homemakers, young people, and the disabled voters who, with no significant relationship to a person's political party. And furthermore, this study shows that neither party gets any particular advantage from the vote-by-mail system. SB 162 codifies vote-by-mail in statute and deletes obsolete references to polling place elections and also to punch card ballots, ballot stubs, and polling books. Since all state and local elections have been held by mail since 2000, it is both timely and appropriate to update and correct the statutes. Vote by mail is working well in Oregon, giving easy access to voting and improving citizen participation. 29% of all voters in Southwell's study say they vote more often with vote by mail. Since the 2004 general elections, the League has heard from citizens and election officials in seven other states inquiring about adopting vote by mail in their states. Because of vote by mail, Oregon did not experience the problems that other states had with growing numbers of absentee voters, difficulties finding poll workers, and long discouraging lines at the polls on election day. The League urges you to join the Senate in passing SB 162. Please move this bill forward with a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Margaret, did you want to say a few words? There's a couple minutes left for this testimony.
It was my privilege to testify in front of Representative Blumenauer and Representative Hooley. I'm sorry, my name. My name, for the record, Representative Kitts. My name is Margaret Knoll. I'm president of the League of Women Voters of Oregon.
Thank you.
And thank you for having me today. When I was talking with Representative Blumenauer and Kitts, they were very interested in looking at vote by mail as something that could be used in other states. And I think that the evidence is that our system is actually less prone to fraud. It actually is so carefully checked along the lines that we are very proud. I'm very proud to be from a state by vote by mail, and I'm very proud to get asked by people in other states, well, how do you do it? And they ask, well, how do you make sure that that ballot comes from that voter? And, of course, Every single signature is checked, and they have training. The poll workers, the election workers have training to check each signature. And of course, I want to say that I greatly admire the election workers in Oregon. I have been sworn in when we had polls to be a deputy. You swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and I know that. I know that when they have people, I was told that at libraries when they watch the ballot boxes, those people, the librarians, are deputized. They have to be also upholding the Constitution.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here. I will tell you we have three speakers left. I will tell you who they are so that if any of you don't want to wait around in hopes that you're going to be able to make it into this particular hearing. I am going to have a mob outside as it is.
You're gathering a rope, sir.
Exactly. I would say roll your dice.
Remember who the chair is here.
Ann Lindgren will be next in favor of it. Judy you don't want to testify? You're messing up my rotation. Okay. You got that written down. Well, in that case, we'll go to the next one that would be for it. Is there Larry George on Senate Bill 162? I'll talk to you about it on the radio.
Hi there, Larry.
Thank you, Larry. Then we will go, the next one for it would be Robert Jr. Quidell. Seeing no one. How about another one against it? Judy Mark. I think she's gathering the tar outside. But we're back to the top of the list. Mike Balanese, would you like to come up and speak to Senate Bill 162?
Representative Kitts, members of the committee, Mike Balanese.
Just be away from the mic.
Oh, sorry.
It's
not an Senate Bill 162 has a reference. I'm not going to take time to take my notes out. To making vote by mail the standard in the state and to remove from the lexicon. It's a 35-page bill which has all the statutes and so on. So when the Secretary of State was up here citing in the House bills statutes in the bills that have my name on them, when you go through the 35 pages, you can select and pick out items that are really something to consider, such as remove the term polling place from our lexicon, from history. There's no such thing as a polling place. I submitted to your administrator a picture of the ballot drop site. When Measure 30 came out, I was instructed to stay 100 feet away from that location. The box wasn't there, but two citizens were taking ballots from people driving up, and they were voting at that time on Measure 29, I believe. So a representative from Washington County came out and told me I had to be 100 feet away from that, even though I was gathering signatures on something that had nothing to do with what was being voted on. No problem. I respected it. I was 100 feet away when they came out in the first place. So I knew the law and respected it. If the Secretary of State with Senate Bill 162 has his way and polling place is removed, then the picture that I submitted, the mailbox drop site, is no longer a polling place. So does that mean that we can collect signatures, that we can put signs on the drop site box? It would sure seem like it'd be okay to me, because if it's no longer a polling place, then the 100-foot rule has got to go by the board. The last thing I'll close with, it wasn't mentioned today, but I listened to your hearing from Salem when you had the informational hearing with all the clerks. I believe that the Secretary of State wants to get his hands very dearly on $700,000 from the state of Oregon so that he can get $18 million in matching funds to get the centralized voter registration system going. I favor the central voter registration system. No question about it. It's a good deal. But until those funds are released, $18 million, I believe that Senate Bill 162 should be gone through with a fine-tooth comb, because there's more in there in 35 pages to worry about than in either of the House bills that we discussed earlier. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. And I've had conversations with the Secretary of State. The appropriations bill for the $700,000 will probably start off in this committee, thus being referred to the Ways and Means Committee, because there is obviously a fiscal on it. And he is very much wants to get the $18 million, as I think the majority of this committee wants to, and we want to make sure that it's spent properly, doing everything we can do to ensure that people get to vote and vote accurately.
Okay. Representative Kitts, if I may.
You may.
With the $18 million, I'd like to plant a seed with this committee that no one should be able to come in front of you when you go on the road with this hearing process and tell you that the state of Oregon, with $18 million given to the Secretary of State's office to run elections, cannot afford House Bill 2551 and 2583. The money will be there to take care of those two House bills, $18 million.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
I have gone through the list for Senate Bill 162. At this time, if there is anybody... Ruth, let me clarify. I have gone through the list for Senate Bill 162 and am unable to find anybody that is for it at this time. Any? That's not testified. Annie said, would you like to come up, Annie, and testify on 162? Yeah. I was sure then.
Thank you, Chair Kitts, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andy Miller. I'm the Executive Director of Common Cause Oregon. Common Cause is a citizens lobbying group, nonpartisan, and our mission is open, honest, and accountable government. Did you know that?
I did.
Good. I'm here to say that Senate Bill 162 merely codifies what we're already doing. I'm very disturbed by the effort to bring up again the subject of vote by mail. We have decided that. It is decided by the voters, and it is how things are. It is very successful. Other states are looking at us in envy for the number of people we have participating and the ease of participation. I myself confess I did not vote in many elections other than the general election before this, and now I vote in every election, and that's very important. That's all. I urge you to pass this bill.
Annie, thank you so much for being here. I know you wished to testify on the other two bills. I apologize that we didn't get to you. I think we laid out the ground rules for the hearing.
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, my written testimony is with you, and it shows you the affidavit spot, and that was primarily what I wanted to show you.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to state for the record, and I'll give you a little background. I've spent 6 years as an auditor, and I'm a certified internal auditor. The federal funds often come with specific requirements to be spent. So funds that are designed for a centralized voting system, our centralized registration system, are not likely to be able to be fungible to be used for the elections process itself. So I just want to put that on the record so that nobody thinks that we're going to take money for one purpose and use it for another.
Representative March, I would agree with you, and I understand the process. I would also say that I think there is some flexibility there, considering those funds are not simply earmarked for the centralized voter system, rather Help America Vote Act. So I think that's a very broad swipe there. So we'll see where they can be applied when it comes.
I will be happy to read the federal rules and regulations with you.
I would love it. Ruth Bendel, you are our final testifier today, and you are testifying against Senate Bill 162. So take us home in 5 minutes.
Yes, I can do it in less than that. School board meetings have taught me that. Again, my name is Ruth Bendel. I'm opposed to Senate Bill 162 because I do not regard vote by mail as being that it should be the only option in Oregon in its current form. I believe that until we have ironed out the problems that are real that we've been discussing about the voter registration system and the way that vote by mail is conducted, I think that it should be an open option whether or not we return to polling place systems, whether we possibly have early voting as opposed to vote by mail. So I do not want to see this as a permanent codification. The fact that everybody says that vote by mail is an overwhelming success, my question is, how in the world do they know that it is the success that it is touted to being? How do they know that everybody that is voting is eligible to vote? How do they know that fraud does not take place when ballots are being handled after they've been cast? How do they know that signatures are being properly verified on the outer envelope of the ballot when observers are kept at such a distance from that process, and when observers are even denied the ability to be present at all of the systems that are where the verifications are taking place? So my point is, there are other ways that things can be done. I have no objection to people casting a ballot by mail, but the rules for implementation of that process, from the moment that that ballot is cast, certainly need reviewing, amending, and reforming, and until that is done, please do not codify Senate Bill 162. Thank you very much indeed. Do you have a question?
Thank you, Ruth, and if he has a question, I'll make sure I answer it.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Mark, did you have a question?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Ruth, he doesn't have a question.
Good.
Hey, Mr.
I don't
Chair.
Either. I'll go on the record. Not having a question.
Representative Dalto?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a sort of observation for the record. I was spending some time going over the election results in my particular electoral district earlier this year, and I was astounded to see that more than 90% of registered voters turned out and voted in my district, and I thought that was pretty amazing. That's almost the entire eligible block of folks that live in Oregon House District 21 came out to vote in this last election. 90%. I think that's an amazing statistic, and I think it tells us something.
You did a good job.
I don't know if it was Mr. Kerry or Mr. Bush or Mr. Dalto or whomever, but it was I think that's a pretty incredible success story, whether or not we have the other questions answered that were posed. So.
Thank you, Representative.
Oregon's 20.
Well, I'm sorry. Why don't you, for the record, state your name. We all did that earlier. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's Billy Dalto, and I'm the state representative for Oregon's 21st House District in Salem.
Billy is the youngest member of the Oregon legislature, which he likes to remind me of. He has me by 3 years, so, but that's great. Colleagues, at this time, I will close the hearing on Senate Bill 162. I will now entertain a motion to introduce LCs 2575 and LC 2502 as committee bills.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Amanda, do we need to call the roll on that? Unanimous? Okay. Thank you, Representative. No objections. We will now introduce LCs 2575 and 2502 as committee bills. Adjournment. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you.